Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprise you with new topics every single week, and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. We are fresh off of one of the most interesting UFC events of the year. You could honestly call this one of the most spontaneous UFC events of the year. We're going to talk about it all when we get to it. I'm going to save that for the end of the episode when we discuss this, but of course, we will be discussing UFC Fight Night, Blanchfield versus Barber. We did go 6-3. On prediction, so not too bad, not too bad. Was kind of upset I didn't pick some of the fights I got wrong, but we'll be discussing all of that later on today's episode because it was very, very interesting. But also on today's episode, we are going to be looking at some new UFC fights, discussing the current state of the NBA and NHL, and talking about some new movies I've recently seen. That's right, we're finally back with a little movie reviews on today's episode. But yeah, guys, it's been interesting. Back from my trip, you know, don't have a job right now, and I think I'm in that weird spot where it's like, I know that I need to get a job to start making fun, support myself, to create a business for myself, and even get better equipment to do this, but I'm in this weird spot where nothing sounds appetizing, so I think I just need to dive into a role, except I'm just gonna make some money, learn some skills, and before we know it, we'll be 35 years old, chilling on my yacht with my one-year-old in a Louis Vuitton setup. I don't know what I'm saying, guys. All I'm saying is that life is good and this episode is gonna be even better, so stick around because let's get right on into it with some new UFC fights. That's right, Dana White always blessing us with new UFC fights. Not really Dana White, the rest of the MMA community. Dana only breaks the big ones. Dana only breaks the big ones, if you didn't know. But we've had eight new fights. I'm going to start right there. I'm going to start with eight new fights. I believe that's where we left off. First off, UFC Nashville going down July 12th, the summer of UFC events. We're not going to the Apex till August. Of course, July 12th, heavyweight action as Kennedy and Chukwu back in action, 3-0 at heavyweight. This dude has been an absolute killer. All right, he's taking out Chris Barnett, I know. I think he beat one of the Toffas. I honestly don't know who Kennedy beat last, but he's taking on Walter Walker. Walter Walker, 2-1 in the UFC, wins over Dontel Mays and Junior Toffa. Kennedy has been more impressive, in my personal opinion. Kennedy has been on absolute tear. Isn't he in the rankings? Isn't Kennedy ranked like number 15 or something? No. He's not. How is Kennedy not ranked? I must be very mistaken with my UFC rankings. But nonetheless, winner of this was probably going to get a ranked opponent in the men's heavyweight division. And I, for one, fully support that. Walter, much more of a submission grappler compared to Kennedy, who is much more of a striker. This should be a fun one. I assume it'll be on the prelims, but if it is on the main card, I would not be mad. Another matchup, this one, August 23rd in Shanghai, China. That's right, UFC Shanghai. Light heavyweight division as Dayar Nurgozie back in action. He's 10-1. He did lose his UFC debut last time he fought. Can't remember who he lost to. Honestly, it's been so long. He takes on Yuron Satibaliev. Yes, so, yes, both these guys lost their UFC debuts, looking to bounce back. This is a perfect matchup. One's from Kyrgyzstan, one's from Kazakhstan. Let's get it done in China. Here's another one for that China card, flyweight division. Loner Kavanaugh, 9-0, professionally 2-0 in the UFC, wins over Jose Ochoa and on to Ho. I'm excited for this one. I really am. Loner Kavanaugh had a good performance last time out, looked very sharp, and here he is taking on the guy in Charles Energy Johnson. Charles Johnson wins over Josh Van, Jay Kelly, Azak Maksum. Don't let the 17-7, 6-5 UFC record fool you. This guy has fought in only the best of the best. And if I'm not mistaken, some of his losses, when we look at the men's flyweight division, are to the number 13 guy, I think maybe even number 12 guy. I mean, Charles Johnson is very legit. Charles Johnson is very legit. Do not sleep on this man. This should be a fun one. If there's ever going to be a undefeated fighter losing, he's going to be taking on Charles Johnson in the process. Charles Johnson is a expert gatekeeper. This should be a fun one. UFC Vegas 109 going down August 9th at the Apex. Women's bantamweight action as the number 8 ranked Maribel Silva finally back in action as she takes on the number 14th ranked Jocelyn Edwards. Look, I can tell you this outright. Maribel Silva is going to pick up the win here. Women's bantamweight action is so unpredictable. We're going to talk about some women's bantamweight action we saw on this recent card because, man, I tell you, it's always the woman they say isn't going to win ends up winning. I swear that's always how it goes. Women's bantamweight action, that should be fun. UFC 319 has another matchup in Chicago, Illinois, August 16th, which I may be going to. Fingers crossed, as the number 11th ranked Karen Killer Silva takes on the number 15th ranked J.J. Ulrich. JJ Ulrich somehow has 16 fights. in the UFC. I have no idea how JJ Aldrich is 10-6 in the UFC, but nonetheless, she gets a massive shot here. She takes on Karin Silva. Karin Silva's only loss in the UFC. If I can jog the memory banks, who humbled her? I'm trying to think. Was it Vivian Araújo? It might have been. I think it was Vivian Araújo. Might have humbled her or something, but she lost her last bout. But other than that, her four wins in the UFC are all finishes. She's an absolute killer, as her nickname says. I think she has a 98%, 97% finish rate. She should run through JJ Aldrich on the prelims in Chicago. UFC Vegas 109, that August 9th Apex event, has a fun flyweight match, but the number 7th ranked Alex Perez takes on the number 9 ranked Steve Ursig. This is a perfect fight. Both these guys are one loss away from getting cut. I personally favor Steve Ursig in this one. Should be a striking affair. And if the money's on this one being a knockout, then I'm placing my money on that bet. Should be a fun one. I will probably be rooting for Steve, but if Alex wins, you know, always feel good for him. A week before that, UFC Vegas 108, also in the Apex. Dang, we get 2 weeks of Apex before we go to Chicago and Shanghai. They're just going to torture me there. Middleweight action as Azamat Bekov back in action as he takes on Torres Finney, the Punisher. Torres Finney, 11-0. Azamat, 20-3. 1-0 for Torrance Finney. He had a very lackluster win over Robert Valentine. In fact, a lot of people are calling for him to be cut. He, of course, fought on Damascus Contender Series 3 times, and he won all of his fights, and it was only until the last one everyone said, yeah, we should sign this guy. He is just such a pure grappler. That's all he does. All he does is grapple. Now, as for Azamat Bekov, came into the UFC, destroyed Zachary Reese. People are like, okay, is this guy actually legit? Goes out, does the same thing to Ryan Loader, who won The Ultimate Fighter. This guy is a savage. He is also hilarious on Twitter. Someone asked him, what is your dream fight? And he said, the prelims at the Apex. And nonetheless, the UFC listened, and he will be fighting on the prelims in the Apex. I actually think this should be on the main card of that, but he's from Russia. Torres Finney Smith is from the United States. And oddly, I'm going to be going with Azamat Bekov. I love him. But if there's anyone that's going to beat Azamat, it's going to be Torres using his just utterly boring style of fighting. And then the final fight, which was just announced 3 hours ago as I record this on June 3rd, another middleweight matchup on that same card, Rodolfo Vieira back in action as he takes on Trayshawn Gore. Trayshawn Gore, Rodolfo Vieira, both 5-3. In the UFC. Actually, Trayshawn Gore is 5-3 professionally, 2-3 in the UFC. Rodolfo Vieira, 5-3 in the UFC, 10-3. Professionally. You know, Rodolfo, he's the black belt hunter. He loves the submit guys. He's gotten Cody Brundage, Dustin Silva, Saruman Petrosian, and he's looking to add Trayshawn Gore to that mix. Trayshawn, his only wins are over Josh Fremme and Antonio Tricoli. The guy is not that good. If my money's on anyone, it's going to be on Rodolfo Vieira. Now, of course, anything can happen in this sport. We can see a shocking upset, but I'm probably going to go with Rodolfo Vieira. So those are all your new UFC fights, and honestly, not too bad. Not too bad. Sometimes we don't have any. Sometimes the ones we talk about aren't good. But out of the ones we just listed, a lot of those are exciting. So I will be very, very tuned in when all of them take place. But something I was not really tuned into was the NBA and NHL playoffs. I really haven't been ever since I went on my trip. You know, I just really wasn't checking sports. And I checked back in, and lo and behold, the Timberwolves lost 4-1. That is right. Timberwolves, just another pitiful conference performance. And honestly, worse than the Mavericks one. I would arguably say this one was worse than the Mavericks one. So with that, the Thunder will head to the championship, to the NBA Finals. That's where they will be going. You know, Thunder took game one, won it by 26 points, then won game two by 15. Wolves answered with a 42-point game three win, and everyone was like, the tides are turning. They lose by 2 in game four, and then get blown up by 30 in game five. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander winning MVP, going to the finals. I mean, dude has just been doing it all. Very disappointing. Everyone's calling Anthony Edwards instead of Ant-Man Cant-Man now. It's been fairly sad. Fairly sad. So Timberwolves, another 4-1 conference loss after such a great run. We were the sixth seed. Sixth seed. So good. But mind you, this Thunder team had 67 wins. They're one of the best teams in NBA history. They were rightfully the favorite to make the NBA Finals, and here they are in the NBA Finals. And who will they be taking on? I'm going to confidently say no one really had this. The Indianapolis Pacers. That is right. The Pacers are in it. They had a thrilling 6-game series with the Knicks, where game one, historic. Historic. I mean, just a great performance from Halliburton getting it done, and he wins game one by 3. Game two, Pacers stun the Knicks, win by 5 in New York. Now, going to game three, Knicks win. Okay, then it's 2-1, but Game 4, Pacers pull ahead, win by 9. We go to Game 5, and the Knicks say, no, 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 we're not going anywhere. They win by almost 20 points. But then in Indianapolis, Game 6, it's like almost a 20-point win for the Pacers. So you're getting a Pacers and Thunder NBA Finals. And you know what? This is I'm actually happy with this. Now, I don't think it's going to do that big in numbers just because you don't have many stars in this one, but you're either going to get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander finally taking the Thunder, one of the best teams we've seen in a while, to a first championship win. I don't think Thunder have ever won, or the Pacers winning their first ever one. You know, Tyrese Haliburton could do something that Reggie Miller was never able to do, and that is to win a NBA championship. So whether it's the Thunder, whether it's the Pacers, I'll feel very happy for them. But first game, June 5th, second June 8th, third June 11th, and the fourth June 13th. And this could stretch out to the max to June 22nd. So should be a fun series there if my money's on it. I'm rooting for the Pacers. Going to be awesome. Rooting for the Pacers just because I'm a Haliburton fan. But I do think the Thunder are going to do it. It might even be a 5 or 6 game series in favor of the Thunder. Just hope it's not a sweep. A 7 game series would be ideal. So that's all we got for the NBA. Now moving over to the NHL. If you want anything different from last year's NBA Stanley Cup Finals, you would have been wrong. As the Panthers and Oilers both make it back, both win their conference series 4-1. Just domination. Just domination. And for starters, you know, Panthers, they go out, win game one over the Hurricanes 5-2. Good stuff. They then win game two 5-0. I mean, it is looking out of nowhere. Game three 6-2. Domination. Hurricanes steal game four 3-0, just so they don't get totally swept. Game five, yeah. Panthers win 5-3. Just domination from Florida. Domination from Florida. I mean, when we look at this, guys, 21-2. Let me just do some quick math. 22-10. They outscored them in that series. Mind you, only a 5-game series. That's ridiculous. So Florida making it back there. I mean, their toughest series was that Maple Leaf series, and even in game 7 they beat them 6-1. So Florida making it back. Of course it would make sense that a warm state with literally zero snow, there is zero snow in the state of Florida, zero coldness, is making it to the NBA, not the NBA, the NHL Stanley Cup Finals for a second straight year. But good for Florida. Looking to go back-to-back as they take on their rivals, the Edmonton Oilers. And honestly, feels so good for Edmonton. Really do. They lost 6-3 in game one. And you know what? Drysdale and Connor McDavid, they talked in the back. They're like, hey, boys, what are we freaking doing? Like, we're not going to lose this. They win the next four. 3-0 game two, 6-1 game three, 4-1 game four, and a 6-3 game five win. Oilers just, iced them out there, you could say. Dominant stuff from McDavid. And mind you, they won in round two, 4-1. And they won in round one, as I go and revisit it right now. They won 4-2. Did they not? Yeah, 4-2. So they are yet to see a game 7. They've only seen one game 6. I mean, this is a much better Oilers team than last year, I'll say. And I'm rooting for the Oilers. I really am. And I honestly think the Oilers are going to win. Their first game is Wednesday, June 4th, 2nd the 6th, 3rd the 9th, 4th the 12th, and the max they can go to is the 20th. So exciting stuff for our two major sports right now, NBA and NHL. You're going to be getting a champion out of either Canada, Edmonton to be more specific, Florida, Oklahoma, or Indiana. So exciting stuff for all of those cities. I hope it's not the Panthers. I don't like when it's not my team and they go back to back. I like seeing new champions every year. So in my world, Haliburton gets a ring in Indianapolis and McDavid gets a ring, or gets a cup, you could say, in Edmonton. So NBA Finals, NHL Stanley Cup Finals, exciting stuff all around. But will I be tuned in? You know, if it's on in the background, I'll check in. But other than that, it is what it is. And actually, guys, breaking news right now here on the podcast. I could save it till next episode, but I'm not going to because it just came out now. UFC 318 going down July 19th has a new fight as the number 14th ranked featherweight Danny Gay takes on Patricio Pitbull. That's right, Pitbull back in action after losing to Yair Rodriguez in just embarrassing fashion. Yeah, good stuff. I love this fight. Honestly, I'm picking Dan Ige. These two are the same height, the same style, and I love me some Dan Ige. So there's a little breaking news fight for you right now. And out of all the fights we just discussed, that is easily the biggest one. So perfect. Works out amazingly right there. That should be an exciting bite. And I'll tell you what else is exciting. Some movies we've been watching recently. That's right. I have two new movies to discuss with you both, or I guess both of these to discuss with you all. And, you know, I just, one of these I came across on Hulu, just looking for a movie for me and Lexi to watch. Another one, I read the book, then watched the movie. So first one. First analysis coming up for you. True Story. That's right. True Story, starring Jonah Hill and James Franco. 45% Rotten Tomatoes, 6.3 out of 10 IMDb. It's a perfect hour and 40 minutes. All right. I will say this is a good movie for anyone to watch. And basically, I think it's actually a true story, if I'm not mistaken. But Jonah Hill plays this New York Times writer, Michael Finkel, and he loses his job when he was a credible writer. And he basically just mixed around some details in a story, and they were like, you know what, you're done, you're out of here. And, you know, he's trying to find himself, trying to see what to do after this, when all of a sudden it comes to his attention that this man who murdered his family had been using his name as a secret identity out in Mexico. And he goes to meet this man, and this man is James Franco, or his name in the movie, Christian Longo. And it goes along this story of, you know, James Franco's character used Jonah Hill's character's name for some reason, and basically, he was a fan of his work, he was a fan of his writing in the New York Times, and these two start to build almost a companionship, a friendship, if you will, while Christian is in jail, and they do these interviews, and you start to see just all the details emerge, and honestly, you know, it's not too big of a twist at the end, but I kind of really like the ending. I'm not going to spoil it at all, but this is a solid 7.2 out of 10 movie. 7.2 out of 10. It is worth a watch. And the one thing it really dives into is, when can you tell someone's lying? What can you tell truth from lie? And honestly, when you think the truth is finally revealed here, it's revealed it's another lie. And then you find out, oh, is this real truth? And you find out it's another lie. And this is such a great role to see James Franco in, usually the comedic character. Same for Jonah Hill. I actually watched Get Him to Greek and Jonah Hill and Russell Brand. And you saw this side of Jonah Hill in this movie that was much more serious. Like, there's maybe one joke in this film or something. And when it's revealed at the end, like, this is a true story and what actually happened, it's just as chilling. And I absolutely love the role for these two. And it's a good watch. Really a good watch. True Story. James Franco, Jonah Hill. Highly recommended. If you're just looking for a casual movie. You know, no reason to go out of your way. But you also get Felicity Jones in this. She plays Jonah Hill's girlfriend or wife. And it's not too big of a cast. It really isn't too big of a cast. You might recognize Ethan Suplee. He plays some character. Robert John Burke, you know. There's only really two characters in this. There really only is. And you know what? Go check it out. See for yourself. It's on a number of streaming platforms. But the movie I was very excited to talk with you all about, that is The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Oh my gosh. I wish I would have seen this movie in high school. I really would have. You know, I read the book on my trip, and I was, you know, I started the book, I'm like, this book kind of sucks. You know, what is this writing style? You know, the writing style is the main character, Charlie, writes letters to an anonymous person, his pen pal, if you will, and, you know, I'm not catching on. And finally, I start to catch on. It's just this beautiful story of this freshman going into high school, and he meets these friends that are his seniors, and he's just so different, and he's so unique, and it just really tells you, like, what matters. What matters in life? What matters is showing people you care about them and just being there for people. And it was just such a beautiful book. And, you know, a lot of times you go and watch a movie and you're like, you know, it can never be as good as the book. I arguably say this is an 8 out of 10 book and an 8.5 out of 10 movie. That's right. I absolutely loved this movie. Logan Lehman, Emma Watson, Ezra Miller, perfect leads in this film. You even get Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd's the teacher of this. Now, I do think in the book, the teacher, Paul Rudd's character, Mr. Anderson, was better. I really think that Logan Lehman as Charlie, you'd also recognize him from the Percy Jackson movies. I think he plays an equally good Charlie. Book Sam, played by Emma Watson, and movie Sam, I'm really torn. I'm really torn on which one I like more. I'm going to actually lean maybe more towards the movie version. And as for Ezra Miller's character, I mean, I think the book version is much better, but not by too wide of a margin. But other than that, you know, you get a Dylan McDermott is the father in this film. Katie Walsh is the mother. You get a really good cast in this. In fact, even Greg from Succession. I've been watching Succession. I can't wait to review that series once I'm done with it. What's his actor's name? Because he's in this. Nicholas Braun. Nicholas Braun is in this film. So goofy. It is good. It is good. And the ending, the reason you find out why Charlie is the way he is, I was able to find that out from the movie. When I read the book, I didn't fully grasp that. And I think the movie ending is much better than the book's ending. And by the way, the author of the book directed and produced the entire movie. So it's all his vision on the screen, which is why I really, really like it. You see the exact same dialogue, the exact same themes, scenes playing out. And one scene in particular, which, you know, you read it on paper and it's bad, and then watch it in person. And it's the kissing scene where, and this isn't too big of a spoiler, but Charlie, he's at this party and they're all, he's there with his girlfriend at the time, and, you know, they spin the bottle or truth or dare, whatever. And Patrick dares him kiss the prettiest girl in the room, and he kisses Sam, and it is so awkward. You can feel it through the screen. And that's what I absolutely love about this movie, is you can just feel some of the scenes and just some of the tension coming to life and the emotion. You can really, really feel that. And I felt that from the book, and I felt it with the movie, and I really feel reading the book and watching the movie is a perfect pairing to hear this story. And once you're done, you're like, I want more of these characters, but at the same time, I feel fulfilled with where their journey is. And, you know, that's just how I view it. So, Perks of Being a Wallflower, very great, very recommended. I encourage everyone to give it an old check out. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, that is all for movies. That is all for books. There is no WWE. There is no surprise. I guess these were surprises, but there is no, like, conspiracy theory or anything, because I'm here to talk about UFC Vegas 107, otherwise known as UFC Fight Night, Blanchfield and Barber, because this was a weird, weird event. So I think it's best if we just begin with how the event started. You know, we'll go through all the fights, and then we'll go to the end, all right? So, kicking off the card, Arlise Artelin taking on Ryana Dos Santos, and son of a gun, I was gonna go with Arlise Artelin simply because she was from Romania, but the -265 favorite, Ryana Dos Santos, drew me in, and I shouldn't have, as Alice Artelin wins by unanimous decision. But lo and behold, guys, this was fight of the night. This is one of the better women's fights of the year. You had it 30-27, 29-28, 20-28, all in favor of Artelin. And this was competitive. This was competitive. And Alice came to fight. I mean, 154 significant strikes to 78, defends 5 of the 6 takedown attempts Ryana Dos Santos throws at her. And the only round that Ryana could have won was round 1. I mean, striking-wise, 26-23 in favor of Alice. Round 2, 45-21 in favor of Alice. Round 3, 83-34. And the one thing I love about women's MMA when it's fight of the night is it's always just like one woman just getting her veins brashed in, and then she fires back one big shot that almost knocks out the other. That was this fight. So, unfortunately, miss on the prediction, but great win for Alice. She will keep her spot in the UFC. Her first win in the UFC, 10-7 now, first win since 2023. Good stuff for her. She will remain in the company. As for Ryana Dos Santos, this is now 0-3 with also a loss on Damas Quintero series. She'll be headed to regional MMA. I'm sorry to say, that's just how it's going to go. Nothing much else to it. Nothing really much else to it for Alice Artelin. Now, not for Ryana Dos Santos, I should say. As for Alice, what could be next for her, per se? I don't know, you got a lot of options. You know, woman's strawweight, not the, you know, you could always get her, give her someone, like, on the outside. I don't know. We already mentioned J.J. Aldrich taking on Kyrene Silva. Maybe the loser of that takes on Alice, if Alice wanted to step in on short notice. You also have a fight coming up. I think it's Miranda Maverick Rose Namajunas, maybe the loser. I don't know. She's nowhere really ready for the rankings, but she's coming off a fight of the night, so she could get a big opportunity. I don't know. We'll keep it in the back of our mind, but fight of the night, good stuff to kick off the card. After that, Bellagio Key took on Michael as well, and lo and behold, this is just a run-of-the-mill decision. 29-28, back and forth. Bellagio Key striking makes the difference. 136-118 in favor of him. That's how it went. Round 1, 36-24 in favor of Blasi. Round 2, 54-42 in favor of Blasi. And round 3, 52-46 in favor of Aswell. So the first two rounds clearly to Bellagio. Round 3, back and forth, but most people thought it went to Michael Aswell. So Bellagio getting a win, a much-needed win, bouncing back from his first ever loss by submission in September of 2024. And he's 2-1 in the UFC. And I think he's ready to keep it going. As for Michael Aswell, you know, this is going to be a loss for him, but he took this fight on short notice, didn't do half bad. In the lightweight division, there are always going to be fights for you out there. So, Michael, you keep your head high. I'm sure they're going to find him someone coming off of a Day One's Contender Series, even another short notice matchup for him. But as for Balaji, you know, a lot more options. A lot more options for Balaji. He's 29, coming at you from Belgium. And I think that there's going to be some opportunities coming up in the lightweight division. You know, there's always your Manuel Torres, your Daniel Zalubers, your Esteban Ribovics. There's lesser guys, too. You know, Jim Miller could be a fun fight for him. And we could even square him up with a guy who we're going to mention in just a second who got the first performance bonus of the night. There's a lot of options for Balaji Okiba. For the Belgium native, great win here. Happy for you. But yes, another lightweight matchup, our final lightweight matchup of the night. Jordan Leavitt, Kurt Hollebone. Nothing's more satisfying than win for no reason. I don't hate Kurt Hollebone for any reason. I just, like, for some reason, like, was never a fan of him. And watching Jordan Leavitt just run through him, submit him in a minute, 39 seconds, so satisfying. That's right. Jordan Leavitt gets his 7th career submission, his 9th career finish, as he steamrolls Kurt Hollebone to a victory. And you know what? We predicted Jordan Leavitt to get a round 2 submission, and this boy was not wasting any time. He gets it done in round 1. And this is going to be only the third time in Kurt Hollebone's career that he's been finished, and I think it was in his final UFC fight, nonetheless. Especially UFC for sure, MMA, I don't know, but 2 straight losses, you know, he's 1-3 in his last 4, you know, overall in the UFC, just an abysmal record. 38 years old for Kurt Hollebone, I'd probably hang it up, so Kurt, bye-bye, I would retire. I mean, this fight lasted 1:39, 1:27 of control time for Jordan Leavitt. 3 of 4 takedowns. He was like, you know what? I'm just going to go right across and take him down. He did. Kurt got back up. Kurt tried to get back up. Jordan locks in the anaconda choke. Hollebone goes to sleep, and Jordan Leavitt breaks out some goofy, weird celebration. The Monkey King is his nickname. Absolutely love him. And he's been win-loss in his last 4, but now he's in the win column. His last 2 wins have been round 1 finishes for 50K performance bonuses. And when we look at his last 2 losses, Chase Hooper, Paddy Pimblett, we can overlook that, okay? So, Jordan, big fights ahead, and, you know, Blasio Key could be an option. There's always going to be some lightweights out there. You know, there's always going to be lightweights out there for people to fight. Now, I always like to do Jim Miller. I think a lot of guys would square up well with Jim Miller. That's just my personal opinion. I mean, I'm trying to think of some other lightweights out there that he could potentially take on. I don't know. There's your Marquel Medeiros. He was supposed to fight in this card. That didn't really transpire. I don't think Abdul Karim Alawadi is going to be coming back anytime soon. But Nikola Verkhaninov, he's taking on Francisco Prado. That might be a welterweight. But yeah, lots of options. Jordan Leavitt is going to be a mainstay in the lightweight division. He's a fun fighter. And at 29, you know, he's still young. Surprisingly, Kurt Hollebone, though, not so young. Bye-bye. With that, we got into our final prelim. Actually, was this our final prelim? I think this was our final prelim, oddly enough. You know, a lot of fight cancellations, unfortunately, and our final prelim was Alan Nascimento and Rafael Filho. And I'm really sad I missed on this, but this was Filho's fight to lose. Okay, Rafael Filho came out so strong. So strong. I mean, literally a 10-9. Everyone had it 10-9 round 1. Almost submitted Alan Nascimento. 11 submission strikes to 4. 4 minutes and 7 seconds control time of 2 of 4 takedowns. This is going to look like Filho is going to run away with a victory. Round 2 comes around, though. Filho lands 2 takedowns, but gets reversed. And Alan Nascimento gets 3.5 minutes of control time. And Filho only lands 1 significant strike. And so, clearly, 1 round apiece. Round 3 comes around. Alan Nascimento almost submits him, is able to get a reverse, land a takedown of his own, 3 minutes, 24 seconds control time. And Alan Nascimento picks up the unanimous decision victory. So Nascimento, big win for Piero also, you know, getting back at it. You know, he hadn't fought since January of 2023. Gets a win here. This is now 3 straight wins. Good stuff for Alan Nascimento. As for Filho, his 2-fight win streak ends here, unfortunately, but he will still stick around in the men's flyweight division. Do you want to say 13 minutes and 23 seconds of this 15-minute fight were fought in control time? So that is kind of exhausting. 14 significant strikes to 12. I mean, combined 26 significant strikes. A combined 70 total strikes between these two. Just a grappling matchup. Just a grappling matchup at the end of the day. And Al Cemento, 3-fight winning streak. You always know I'm ready to throw them at the rankings. You know, Joshua Van is taking on Bruno Silva, loser of that. You got Ramazan Temeriov, could always use a good fight like this before he moves up in the rankings. You've got, I think, Tagir Limbekov might need a short-notice opponent. I don't know. Kai Sakura has a fight coming up. Maybe Kai Sakura and Tim Elliott, I think, might be fighting. So maybe the loser of that. But Alan Osmento, I think, is ready for the rankings. And I would not be too far past to put Filo in a matchup soon with someone like Loner Kavanaugh and Charles Johnson. We mentioned them earlier. The winner of that versus Filo could be a fun contest. These two are going to stick around. But Alan Osmento, 3-fight winning streak, is going to keep the momentum. Following that, we got into our main card. Like you say, you know, only 4 prelims. Not too bad, you know, fight of the night, performance bonus, 2 run-of-the-mill decisions, that was that. Getting into the main card, Zachary Reese, Dusko Todorovic. Just, you know, it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. But like I said, another decision in the apex. There were some big moments where a crowd have been really, really useful, you know, and, you know, you're getting a late rally from Zachary Reese because, I mean, he lost round one. Dusko Todorovic landed 3 of 4 takedowns, almost submitted him, 10 significant strikes to 6, 31 significant strikes to 19. I was like, 31 total strikes to 19. I was like, no way Dusko Todorovic is about to beat Zachary Reese. Round two, Reese comes out, gets taken down once, 2 minutes and 10 seconds control time for Dusko, but 17 significant strikes to 8, the strikes leaning more towards Zachary Reese. Round three, defends 5 takedowns from Dusko, outstrikes him 27 to 17 with some hard shots busting him open, and Zachary Reese takes home the 29-28. Across the board, unanimous decision. And good stuff for Reese. Good stuff for Reese. Back in the win column after losing to Azamat Bekov. And now, 3-2. 3-2 in the UFC, getting a little momentum here with the win. Much needed. As for the totals for this fight, 50 significant strikes at 35, 73 total strikes exactly each. How about that? 2 of 3 on takedowns for Reese for 1:19 control time. For Dusko, 4 of 13. 5:30. So I always like to look at control time. If someone has 5 minutes, that's basically a round. 10 minutes, that's 2 rounds. So that's just good reference there that Dusko took round one. And then after that, 9 takedowns defended. Great stuff for Zachary Reese. And I'm curious to see what's next. So the middleweight division is so deep. The middleweight division runs so deep. And there's just an unlimited number of people out there. You know, I think Edmund Shahbazi and Andre Petroski, they have a fight coming up. The winner of that versus Zachary Reese is a good fight right there. And as for Dusko, you know, this is the tale of a lot of losers, right? Ana dos Santos, Kurt Holobow, and also Dusko Todorovic, who are no longer going to be in the UFC. This is now 3 straight losses for Dusko. And as far as his UFC run, you know, it's going to end, I think, here with a 3-6. 3-6, 1-4 in his last 5. Just not too good. 12-6. I think if he goes to an independent scene in Europe, I mean, guys, he's 31. You go out there, you pick up a bunch of wins, all finishes. You come back at the age of 34, 35, one last run. That's your best bet. But Dusko Todorovic came into the UFC undefeated and has now lost 6 bouts. So Dusko, going to say bye-bye to you. But for Zachary Reese, you know, someone like Edmund Shahbazi and someone like Andre Petroski, whoever comes out of that in the striker-grappler matchup, could be fun. And I'd even do Bo Nickel versus someone like Zachary Reese. Yeah, I'm always looking for fights like that. I don't think Bo Nickel is ready for Rainer Day Raiders. Let's have him fight the Zachary Reeses of the world. After that, this is why women's MMA gets a bad rap. Because not only did I get the Macy Chisota for Kelly Vera pick wrong, which honestly, I don't know what Macy was doing this whole fight, but this was honestly one of those boring fights I've ever seen in my life. I mean, holy cow, I was not watching. Just to let you know, 28 significant strikes at 22, favor of Ketlin. 106 total strikes, 52, favor of Ketlin. 0 of 1 on takedowns for Ketlin. 0 of 4 for Macy. 10 minutes and 6 seconds of control time for Ketlin Vieira. I mean, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. I was losing my mind. So round one, they're striking on the feet. Okay, they're striking on the feet. A little bit of clinch work. Very entertaining. Very entertaining. Round one is where all the action happened. Round two, Macy basically like fails the takedown. Ketlin winds up in control time. 4:47 control time. It's just Ketlin on top landing like soft low punches. You're like, okay, can't get much worse. Similar thing in round two. Macy shoots a bad takedown. Ketlin reverses it, gets on top. 4:13. By the way, didn't even count his full reversals. Macy basically just fell backwards and Ketlin was on top of her. Oh my gosh. Macy might have won round one. Round 2 and 3 go to Kent and Vera. So dull. So boring. Give neither of them a title shot. But, you know, we'll move past this boring fight. It just goes, it's a record now. Loss for Macy, win for Kellen at the end of the day. Kellen Vera now has gone win-loss since her back-to-back main event wins in 2021 and 2022. Her losses are to Kayla Harrison and Hawkway L. Pennington. So, you know, the woman fighting for the belt and the number one contender. So, I mean, who's not actually the number one contender. But Kellen Vera, I think, is in a good position to rematch Hawkway L. Pennington. She hasn't fought since dropping the belt to Pena. That would be the number three and number one women going at it. There's a good fight right there. The only other fight that you could really give Kellen Vera would maybe be the loser of Pena and Kayla Harrison, or even Norma Dumont. So those are all the options I'm going to do as far as Kellen Vera is concerned. But, you know, she's definitely going to be getting a top name coming up next. As for Macy Chison, you know, this snaps her 2-fight win streak, which kind of sucks. She's 11-4 now, but, you know, still ranked number 5. You can always take on the number 6 ranked Irene Aldana. I really like the number 7th ranked Eileen Perez. We already mentioned Maribel Silva's taking on Jocelyn Edwards, a rematch, or even Jocelyn Edwards next. You can have her fight Norma Dumont. There's just so many options at women's bantamweight. So this fight's over. This fight happened. And honestly, in this division, you're always one fight away from getting a title shot. But when you perform like that, you're not getting anything. So we'll leave that fight there. There's a lot of options for what's next for them. But if I could actually, like, choose what's next, I'm doing Kellen Vera versus Hawkway L. Pennington, and I'm doing Macy Chison versus Eileen Perez. Those are my options there. After that, we got into the big four, as we call those. The final four are going to be very exciting matchups of the evening. First off, Dustin Jacoby, Bruno Lopez. The fact Dustin Jacoby didn't get a 50K performance bonus is just mind-boggling to me. I understand we've been on this streak of only giving out 2 performance bonuses, but I mean, come on. Not only did he get a knockout, but it was a cool knockout. It was a minute and 50. I mean, 17 seven strikes of 3. Ran through Bruno Lopez. Made him look silly. Dustin Jacoby, 37 years old, getting his 14th career knockout. 15th career finish. This dude's on absolute roll now. 2 straight wins. 2 straight great knockouts. I mean, ridiculous. For Bruno Lopez now, yeah. What more do you want for this guy? 2 straight losses, 2 losses now, both in round 1. You know, he's 1-1 in the UFC. He'll be back. You know, he'll be back in the light heavyweight division. You always need some bums. Actually, who's I'm thinking of someone who I would actually like to see Bruno Lopez take on. It's not Zhang Mingyang. You already took on Brett Spriero. I'm thinking of someone who was the guy? I'm trying to think of Bogdan Guskov submitted. Bogdan Guskov submitted someone recently, and that was who I wanted him to take on next. I wonder if I can find that name real quick. Alonzo Menifield taking on Lumber. Actually, Julius Walker, who lost to Alonzo Menifield, that could be an option. But I have really someone in mind. I'm never going to find this guy. I'm never going to find him. How about Jimmy Crute? Jimmy Crute versus Bruno Lopez? I don't know. Bruno Lopez clearly has no chin. Dustin Jacoby, you're a beauty. Dustin Jacoby, you are a beautiful, beautiful man. They robbed you of not giving you a 50K performance bonus. But, you know, Alonzo Menifield, Omar Sy, they're having a matchup. Bogdan Guskov's ranked there at number 14. I'm going to be honest, guys. Dustin Jacoby, Johnny Walker, book it. Book it. Johnny Walker hasn't fought in so long, and Dustin Jacoby is 37. Now's the time to give him a run. He has been robbed of decisions. We've already discussed how Dustin Jacoby has been robbed of decisions. The Alonzo Menifield one, the Osmat Mirzakhanov. The Klitschko one was a pure robbery. Osmat and Alonzo were just close. He probably did lose those, but, you know, Jacoby ran into some issues here and there. I would love to see him get one more shot at the rankings. But beautiful stuff from Dustin. Lovely to see what's going to be next for him. As for Bruno Lopez, I mean, either cut him or give him someone of a lower level. Julius Walker or whoever in the world I'm thinking of that took on Bogdan Guskov. And Bogdan submitted him. He kind of had fuzzy areas, long and lanky. I will never think of his name. After that, we got into what was supposed to be our third to last fight of the evening. Ramiz Brahimaj and Billy Ray Goff. And oh, I was so happy. I picked Ramiz to win, and he won, and it was brutal. It was nasty. Ramiz Brahimaj, 3 minutes and 16 seconds this fight lasted, and he had a minute and 42 seconds of control time. I mean, quite simply, closed the distance, wouldn't allow Billy to land a single strike, and locked in a nasty standing guillotine choke. I mean, he was cranking the neck. I mean, it was painful. It was very, very painful, and it was making me cringe. I was nervous watching it, and Billy Ray Goff went to sleep, and Ruiz won, and I was very, very happy. Look at that. 100% finish rate, his 11th career submission. Ramiz Ramash is as legit as they come. You know, a lot of people were looking at that one win over Mickey Gall going, nah, it's just one win. Just one win. It's now two straight wins. He's now made $100K in bonuses in the last 8 months. Actually, 7 months, my bad. And both round one finishes. So good stuff for Ramiz. After starting out his UFC career, 2-3, he is now 4-3. And he's got a little momentum coming with that. And as for the welterweight division, there's going to be a lot of fights. Going to be a lot of fights out there. Trying to exactly place who I think Ramiz should fight is pretty tough. We're going to use a little reference here of MMA Theory. He's on Instagram, absolutely massive account. He always posts the best analysis of who should be next for each of these fighters. And he proposed Renat Fakhretdinov, and I think that's a phenomenal fight to do right there. Renat Fakhretdinov is such a fun option. I absolutely adore that. And you also have Michael Chiesa's taking on, I think, Court McGee coming up. I think the winner of that versus Ramiz could be a fun fight too. Ramiz, lots to do with him. As for Billy Ray Goff, I don't know, man. You know, this was obviously a short-nosed fight. Billy was supposed to be taking on Sukhyo Mi. Ramiz was supposed to take on Oban Elliott. So Billy Ray Goff actually got a tougher opponent here. So it's now two straight losses. I wouldn't necessarily hold it against him too much, but I think Themba Garimbo could be a good name for Billy Ray Goff. Themba and him both could use a win. They're both coming off of round one submission losses. There's a fight you can do right there. Beautiful stuff. Ramiz, Billy, Ramiz, very happy you won. After that, we got into the co-main event, or in quotations, the co-main event, as Matheus Cameron took on Ludwig Klein. And honestly, sometimes it annoys me how good Matheus is because, you know, he's so technical. He's so technical that he acknowledged that Ludwig Klein was going to beat him in the strike game, and he took him down three straight rounds. It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad, guys. I can't lie. Round one, 10 significant strikes to 2, 3 minutes of control time, 4 of 7 on takedowns. Round two, 17 significant strikes to 2, 1 takedown, 4 minutes, 5 seconds. Now, round three, Matheus was letting the striking go. 38 significant strikes to 20, a lot of ground and pound there. 1 takedown, minute and a half of control time. The finals for the fight of the 30-27 decision, 65 significant strikes to 24, 142 significant strikes to 85, or total strikes to 85, 6 of 11 on takedowns, almost 9 minutes of control time for Matheus Cameron. Yeah, there's levels. There is levels to this, and Matheus Cameron showed it here against Ludwig Klein. I think you honestly have to put Matheus against dogs for him to produce a good fight. Think of Arvin Sarukian. Think of Fazeev. Think of Hooker, okay? When we have him fighting guys like Rafael dos Anjos, Jalen Turner, and Ludwig Klein here who clearly cannot grapple, all right? You're going to run into instances like this. So Matheus Cameron getting it done, doing what he has to do. And as for Ludwig Klein, 6-fight winning streak snapped. Just kind of a humbling experience here. Really a humbling experience at lightweight. And honestly, I think he's talented. You know, I honestly am going to throw around similar names of, you know, Chase Hooper. You know, I'd even do Jordan Leavitt could get an opportunity against him. You got Ignacio Mahomedes. You've got your Daniel Zalubers, Emmanuel Torres. You got a lot of good fighters in this lightweight division. Ludwig Klein will be back. Now, he is, how old is he? 30, he's 30 years old. So, yeah, Ludwig Klein, he has some time to improve. You know, Matheus Cameron is not too bad of a guy to lose to. Now, as for Matheus, doesn't move up in the rankings as expected, but what should be next for him? Now, he expressed he wants to fight down. He said, give me Benoit Saint-Denis, and you know what? Him versus Benoit Saint-Denis in September 6th, Accor Arena in Paris, book it. 5-round co-main event. I think they might do Aspinall versus Gon. I'm thinking they're going to do that. So if not, Ciryl Gon's going to be taking on probably Helton Almeida in the main event. But 5-round co-main event, you can even just do a 3-round co-main event. I think that would be a bloody fight. I think Matheus and Benoit Saint-Denis would deliver when both those guys were to fight. Now, who could be some other options? Renato Moicano could be a fun fight you could do there. You could run back the Rafael Fiziev fight. And if he is going to fight up, you know, they could rematch him and Armin Sarukian since Armin is waiting around. But Matheus is in for a very fun fight whenever he fights next. Then with that, ladies and gentlemen, we got into our main event and all the fighters were ready to walk out. Bruce Buffer was waiting to announce it. And then all of a sudden the broadcast stopped. And everyone's like, what's going on? And Buffer comes on and goes, Macy Barber is unable to compete. This event is over. And I was like, Are you serious? That is right. They did even change the fight night name to UFC Fight Night. Gamrot versus Klein. They've kept it as UFC Fight Night. Blanchfield versus Barber. Macy Barber ruled unable to compete right as she's about to walk out. I don't know what happened. I don't know if she had a seizure. People are saying she had a seizure. That's been the main rumor. People are saying that she fainted or something, but Macy Barber doesn't walk out. The fight night ends. 9 fights. Matus Gamrot, Lupin Klein. The 3-round official main event, which wasn't even supposed to be the main event. Erin Blanchfield rightfully pissed, as she should be. I mean, just wow. Just wow is all I have to say. And Macy Barber, she's been battling some health issues. I mean, let's not act like Macy Barber hasn't fought in a long time. And here she is, pulling out of a second straight main event. This one, seconds, not even minutes, seconds before walking out. Utterly embarrassing. She's ranked number 5 in the women's fight division. She's ranked number 15 in the women's pound for pound. I think they need to cut her. I think that if you're not able to walk out right before you're about to go out in a main event, you probably shouldn't be fighting anymore. Probably shouldn't be fighting. So we're not even going to say what's next for Macy Barber. A long layoff. I don't even think we should hear the name Macy Barber. And, you know, this sucks. 27 years old. She's supposed to be the youngest champion of all time. That didn't work out. She was on a nice little win streak here, and she blows it. Second straight time she's blown it. Had a main event against Rose in Denver last year, blew it, and now she really blew one here. And, you know, it's stuff that happens with these Apex events that really is giving the UFC a bad name with the product they're putting out. So I think that's something that the UFC needs to work on. But, man, tough for Erin Blanchfield. That's who I feel bad for. And I didn't even pick Erin Blanchfield to win, and now I feel bad. I almost should give myself an X for picking Macy Barber. I'm not gonna, but that's all I'm gonna say on that. So, Macy, you take a long layoff. As for Erin Blanchfield, she's ranked number 4. You know, I saw a lot of people saying on the social medias that she should try and take a short-notice fight, you know, this upcoming week or even the week after. I don't think she's going to do that. I think she knows her worth as a fighter. I mean, let's not act like she isn't coming off a win over Rose Namajunas in a main event. She knows she's good. So what could be next for her? Obviously, Alexa Grasso is ranked number 3. All right. You're going to have Valentina Shevchenko either taking on Zhang Weili or Natalia Silva. If it's Zhang Weili, Natalia Silva versus Erin Blanchfield is a fun fight. And if she does have to take a short nose fight fighting down, Jasmine Jasu Divisions at 4 is a perfect grappler's affair. So, Erin, really sucks for you. I mean, I wasn't even pumped about this main event, but the fact it didn't happen is going to make this, honestly, the worst main event of the year. And I think I might start doing YouTube videos, guys, which would be fun, posting some YouTube videos. I'll create a different channel apart from the Surprise Chef podcast. But I think I'm going to start making YouTube videos, and I'm going to do ranking the first half of the UFC for fight nights and all of such, and this is going to easily be the worst main event of the year. And I think at the end of the year, it's got to be the worst, you know, because it didn't even happen, and yet the event is still titled under that main event. So Blanchfield Barber never happens, and your official main event, Matus Gamrot. So look at that, Matus Gamrot, without even actually wanting it, just got himself another main event. I think it's his third main event. Good for you, Gamrot. Now, it won't say he was the main event, but he was. So with that, we move on from this disastrous ending right there. And honestly, May was a interesting month, to say the least. But now we move into what I am very excited for. I'm calling it the greatest summer of all time, as June is absolutely loaded. And we kick June off with UFC 316 this upcoming Saturday, which I'm very, very pumped about. Sean O'Malley and Rob Dovizioso, a rematch that no one asked for. Quite literally, no one asked for this. I don't know why we're getting it, but we're getting it. And Marab's probably going to ragdoll him again. But nonetheless, Kayla Harrison looking to save the women's bantamweight division as she takes on Juliana Pena. You also get Joe Pyfer looking to knock out Kelvin Gastelum. The debut of Patchy Mix in the UFC as he takes on everyone's least favorite fighter, Mauro Bautista, who, by the way, is such a likable guy. Vicente Luque takes on Kevin Holland on the main card. Bruno Silva, Joshua Van, beautiful flyweight matchup. Azamat Mirzakhanov back in the light heavyweight division. Sergey Spivak back in the heavyweight division. Chaos Williams is back. Wayne Kong is back. Jekka Sargai is back. You get a lot of fun fights. UFC 316 is absolutely loaded. Following that, ladies and gentlemen, we move on from New Jersey to Atlanta as Kamaru Usman returns after 2 years to take on Mansa Joaquin Buckley. Beautiful. Rose Namajunas back in action. Cody Garbrandt's on that card. You get some great up-and-comers in Allah. Omar Sy, Mansoor Abdul-Malik, Paul Craig is back on here. You even get Michael Chiesa, Ricky Simone, and Charles Jourdain. Lots of fun fights. Following that, We go to Baku, Azerbaijan, Khalil Roundtree Jr. takes on Jamahal Hill and Rafael Fiziev. Ignacio Bahamondes. I forgot that fight was booked. We'll see if we finally get Curtis Blaydes and Ruslan Kuniev. Nazim Sadikov is on this card. Mohamed Naimov, Bogdan Grad, Azat Maksum, Tagirlin Bekov. Wow, Tagirlin Bekov. Take on Azat Maksum. I was unaware of that fight as well. And we round out June, which could be a career, could be a defining matchup. This is going to be one of the most just insane cards you're ever going to see. Topura Oliveira, the main event. You also get Pantoa Kaikara France. Moya Kano Darius. Forgot that fight was happening. Roy Valencape. Paulo Costa. Roman Kopilov. Oh my gosh, forgot about that. Jack Hermanson, Gregor Rodriguez. I forgot about that. Absolutely action-packed. And, you know, July, weekend of July 4th, they're taking off. Then they're going to Tennessee, Louisiana, Abu Dhabi. June and July are going to be so fun. Even, you know, they bless us with two awful Apex cards to kick off August, and then we go to Chicago, then to Shanghai, and then actually we go to Paris, then we go to San Antonio, Texas for UFC Noche. The UFC is in for a fun year. But, ladies and gentlemen, that's all I have for today's episode. You know, we got big events coming up, big things going on in everyone's lives. Everyone's lives are moving on, or getting better. I don't know what I'm saying, but yes. Thank you all for listening so much. Probably not going to talk about the NBA and NHL until we get more towards the end. Maybe some more movies I'll discuss, but so much WWE, so much UFC, so much fun stuff going on. We will have so much more to talk about on the next episode of the Surprise Jab Podcast. And you already know, where am I going to catch you next time on? None other than the name we say all the time, the Surprise Jab Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, have an amazing week.